months of a highly structured incarceration program, we would transition these boys to a supervised probation for another 6 months. And here's the power. This is why I'm talking about it tonight. When they got out of our program, they had to go back to school. If they had not graduated from high school, they had to go to a community college. They had to enroll in some type of educational program, maybe a vocational technical institute. But they had to be some type of further continuing education. They had to be involved in some spiritual development. We had over 80 houses of worship. Pick one, and you're going to go to there, and you're going to learn spiritual development. You're going to go into a community resource. You're going to do some type of 4-H, Boy Scouts, some civic organization, and you're going to voluntarily give of your time, energy, and resources to help the society that you victimize for your own selfish gain. We're going to make you have a hobby. You're going to have something in your free time to occupy your unstructured free time. And when we did all of those things and we combined it with financial counseling, how to do savings, how to invest some of the money that you made in the future, probably 90% of those kids did really, really good. We did have about 10% that were recidivists and they'd go back to their life in crime. But one of the most powerful things was because we invested in these boys, 15, 16, 17, 18, they made it. And now 20 some odd years later, I'm still getting phone calls and text messages on their receiving date, the day that they came in there. Hey, thank you, drill instructor Brown, for saving my life. And it was such a simple way. We took a real human being and we invested in their life for somebody that never had anybody investing in their life. Our homeless veterans out on the street, they don't have anybody investing in their life. To them, sometimes it's futility. Yeah, there's no end in sight. There's no hope anymore. And a lot of them are committing suicide. A lot of them are so weak and frail, they starve to death. Or they get killed on the street. Or they freeze to death this winter. So we're going to dust them off. And we're going to do it. I don't need $1 million. I'm going to do a lot myself. Just with the law enforcement pension I make, I'm going to be able to rescue a few every year by myself. God forbid somebody else helps me, and then somebody else helps me, and then somebody else helps me. We've got the entire transition center fully funded because we've got 25 people out there that are helping us with time, energy, and resources. And then we're going to rinse and repeat, and we're going to do it again and again. And you may not believe in our organization or our name or how we structured it because it doesn't dot I's and cross T's. We will always be legal. We will always be moral. We will always be ethical. And I promise you, and you can come down and look at us yourself, we will always do the right thing for our veterans at the right time, in the right way, for the right reason. We're never going to have some big corporate party in Hawaii, okay? There's not going to be top heavy. The money that comes in, at least 90% of it will always, always, always go right back to taking men and women off the street, buying them shoes and clothes, getting them tools. You need a hammer. You need a saw. You need a drill. You're working now. Yeah, we can make that happen for you. And our gift to them is they get their life back. Our gift to them is they're productive, satisfied members of society again. And it's so simple to do. Yeah, it would be nice to have a couple of multi-million dollar donors. But, you know, if you're going to be that superficial that the only time you're going to give money is to get a tax break, you have to give something to get something back. That's not giving. That's a yo-yo. You give out money so you get more money back. I want people, like Jesus said, to give and don't worry about what you're getting back. Ronald Reagan said, there's no limit to what we can accomplish if we stop worrying about who gets credit for it. Can you imagine what we could do in America if we gave money to philanthropic people that were doing it for the right reason, at the right way, at the right time, in the right place? Hmm. It'd be unbelievable. And that's what we're trying to do here with NAFAD.
If there's something in the Bible that's, I don't remember the scripture, but it's something about the fruit of the tree, right? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir. I do. It's in Matthew 7. It talks about by their fruit, you will recognize them.
Right. So
a good tree cannot produce bad fruit, and a bad tree, an evil tree, cannot produce good fruit. And that's what Jesus said. Jesus said that if you don't believe in me, look at my works, so they testify of me. There's a lot of people out there, and we talked about that before. I think you mentioned that about some nonprofits or whatever. Anybody can have one, and you go, hey, I'm a grapefruit tree. But if you look at them, they got bananas on them or cherries. By their fruits, you will recognize them. Yep. I'm telling you, you can come down and look, and we're going to take veterans off the street.
Another thing I found out, these big, I don't want to use the names, but these big, very well-known names, anybody would recognize it if I said it. I was shocked to find out that for every dollar that's donated, less than 10 cents goes to the end result.
Yes.
So when you're dealing with these big guys, and they've got all this stuff that they administrative costs and whatever. And by the time it's all said and done, a very small amount of what you're donating is actually going to the cause itself. I have found that when we're dealing with the smaller companies, and you've made it very clear that you guys are very transparent. You want to see what's going on, you can come down and take a look. And you said a few moments ago, well over 90, I think it was 90 cents out of every dollar goes to the cause. And that's cutting it pretty close. You have to have something to run the company itself. The company can't continuously run into the red. Otherwise, you're going to have problems from the IRS because they don't like that. So you have to have something. And if you can run on less than 10% or at 10%, that's pretty doggone good.
That's a biblical formula. And that's what we follow. The church is supposed to run on that. Why can't we?
Yeah. Amen. Good point. I learned quite a bit about, I didn't realize we were going to go down to 301C2, whatever it was. Go down that road, but I guess it was good because I learned quite a bit about it.
In that case, all I was trying to help out is to help you realize that you could bring in more money. And it's not that the fact that these people don't want to give money. It's the problem is they are in these tax dilemmas that you are only allowed as an individual to give $10,000 to any organization by tax laws. So they're limited to give you, a private corporation, $10,000. And so there's that limitation there that they can overcome with a 501(c) corporation. They can give them as much money as you want. And that's what they like, is it gives them a chance to, you know, give $1 million. I mean, Margaret Williams, a friend of mine in Houston, is worth $1.5 billion. And she's been a friend of mine for years. Her son married a woman who inherited $7 billion.
Good gravy.
And then her brother, Scott, inherited $7 billion, and her mother, $32 billion. These are the people that I know very, very well and that like giving money out. Margaret makes $645 million a day.
Oh my gosh.
So she can't spend it. Every time we were out together, the last charity event we were at the Museum of Fine Arts on a Friday, and she gave $10 million to them that night. The next night we were at the Philharmonic and she gave them $5 million. I'm used to being around these people that like giving money because they can't spend it all, but they can't do it for tax purposes by law. It would cause more trouble for them than if they found a 501(c) and they go, here, take $10 million. Who cares? Doesn't matter to them.
I've had a lot of money at times in my life, and I've always helped people. I've always tried to be philanthropic and, you know, help the downtrodden. And I've never, ever, helped like a lady that I see her at Costco, and she's got a station wagon and all four tires in her spare are all rotted out. And they go, you need five new tires.
A few $100. We're not talking. These people are donating hundreds of millions of dollars to charitable organizations that do really good things. And all I was trying to say is, you know, Bob, there's an opportunity there that you could address in Houston alone. I know, probably 20 billionaires in Houston, Texas alone that are always looking for good charitable organization to donate money to. But based on the tax constraints and the laws, they're limited by these current constraints, and they have to follow it based in their investment portfolio and the way they distribute money. So all I was trying to say is I think you've got a great organization. It's a great concept, and what you're doing is really a good thing. All I was trying to do is tell you, think bigger.
I agree with that, my friend. And there's always a way of constant and never ending improvement. You can always refine things. And I totally agree with that. I guess I'm humbly submitting to you that in our infancy, as we start, this is the modality that we've chosen to start in. And as we progress further and we find that maybe we need to modify things, keeping our core integrity and keeping our core focus intact, we're never going to sell ourselves out for money. But yes, there may be a greater need, and maybe we will modify it. I'm not saying we will never do that. But initially, I think I explained, hopefully adequately, the reason we're not a 501c3. And I would ask you to look at some of that. There's a lot of charitable organizations that exist out there without doing that. But certainly, if there's somebody philanthropic out there that really likes what our mission is, and for whatever the hang up is, say, listen, Bob, you know, call me and say, listen, I have a tax accountant that is phenomenal. Here's what I'd like to do. I'm going to pay him to come and show you how to structure an AFOD in a way that's really going to make you much more effective. How about that? I mean, you know, have one of these big ticket donors, God bless them for having it and for using it to try to make the world a better place. If you were somebody like you was to, you know, introduce them to our concept, listen, we are constantly open to improvising, adapting, and overcoming. You know, we're trying to, you know, always refine it. So if they wanted to pay for their tax consultant or whoever their finance people to come down and say, hey, I'm open ears, I'll come and take notes. And if you can show me that I can make an AFOD more efficient, I would be a fool not to do that. That's why we're here, to serve the veterans. So if they could show me that there's a better way of structuring it and I can serve more veterans more efficiently without giving up our autonomy, without giving our control, I'm there in a heartbeat. So,
well, that's what I was trying to tell you. You don't give up any control. I don't know where you're getting this concept that you're giving up control. You're not giving any control up. You're getting better control, because then you also can attract board members who have their own source of funds that are big.
You cut out on me. I didn't hear.
Okay. There's a lot of, you know, charitable people that want to donate money to an organization like you, but they won't. And simply all I was trying to say to you, you don't lose any control. I don't know where you're getting this concept that you lose control if you've got a 501c3. You actually gain more control. And the reality is you don't pay any taxes. You pay zero taxes. So here you are as a private corporation. You better show a profit to the IRS and you better pay taxes. Otherwise, they will come down your throat in a heartbeat. So here you are throwing money away, when if you just converted a 501 or C, eight, then you could keep all the tax money and that could go to helping more veterans. And well, that's all I'm trying to say. But, you know,
I appreciate that, brother. And listen, I'm a realist. I realize that most multimillionaires in America pay next to nothing or no taxes whatsoever. But you know that there's some places in America that really need tax revenue for their social infrastructure. And, you know, they asked Jesus that question. Master, is it lawful to pay taxes? And he said, you know what? Let me see a denarii. And they handed him a denarii. He said, whose image is that on that denarii? And they said, that's Caesar, meaning that Caesar was in control of that society. Caesar minted that money. He said, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and render unto God the things that are God's. Now, you know, I'm not about not paying any taxes. Now, yes, could I do that? Yes. But my point is, does not society need to have taxes? I was a Marine. I was a cop for a lot of years. I wouldn't have been able to glean a paycheck if the American public did not pay taxes in some shape or form. So paying taxes is not evil in and of itself. Okay. Although the federal government at times can be a bloated pig that maybe eats more than it should. I agree with that concept, but we need to pay taxes. And, you know, I don't subscribe to paying no taxes whatsoever, because the federal government, the local county governments, they need money to Go to a county commissioner meeting sometime. Go to a, how do they pay for their resources? You know, it's tax revenue. So I want to contribute to that. And I want NFAD to contribute to that. Not only are we helping veterans, but we're also giving back to society around us as well. Can you imagine if everybody didn't pay taxes? If everybody had an LLC, had a 501c3, where's the money coming to support our society? So, you know, some people do have to pay taxes. I don't believe paying taxes is evil. I believe in paying my fair share. If I can, but I also believe in using the tax codes to minimize that footprint. And there's some times that we don't pay taxes because our expenses are greater than, you know, what we took in, and we're lawfully and legally allowed to do that. And like I said, I'm defer to our tax accountants and the people that went to school for a lot of years to learn all that. So I appreciate everything you're saying, my friend. And there's wisdom in that counsel, wiser counsel, that we can constantly refine what we're doing. So if there's a way that we can lower our tax footprint, we're all about that. If there's a way that we can become more cost efficient or maybe become more attractive to other donors, that's great. So as it's time to grow, we will. And maybe somebody like yourself would come on board and look at what we're doing, and we'll have a more in-depth conversation about this. I'm intrigued about a lot of what you said. So maybe there's a common ground somewhere in the middle between my viewpoint and your viewpoint. And if you do appreciate our mission values and our mission statement and what we seek to endeavor to accomplish, maybe we can have a follow-up conversation and figure out how we can refine this a little bit, so we're comfortable with the structure, and maybe some donors would be more comfortable as well.
Awesome. Cool. All right. We're going to take a break. I got to get some water. I've got to use the men's room. Been holding it. And we'll be back shortly. Don't go away. It's the Red Pill Reality Show.
I'm going to jump off here, Bob. I wish you the best of luck in your organization. And, you know, I like what you're doing. I like the concept. And I hope you can help a lot of guys out.
All right. All right, Jerry, hang in there. We're going to be right back. Got to take a quick break. I got to get some water. Here we go.
More coming your way on the red.
My mute button.
After this break.
Take the red pill. Take the red pill. We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Number one, radio.
Trim Radio Network. Are you a business owner? Did you know that the government is holding funds right now for your business? The program is called the Employee Retention Act. It's done through the IRS and part of the CARES Act, and it's available to just about every business. This could mean literally hundreds of thousands of dollars into your business. This is not a loan. It's 100% legal and paid directly to you. Go to getmymoneyback.net. That's getmymoneyback.net. To watch a brief video and find out how you can qualify. Getmymoneyback.net. Go there now.
Do you need toner for your Epson, Hewlett-Packard, Canon, Brother, Apple, or Sharp printers? Look no further than Laser Technologies. In business for over 20 years, they offer the lowest prices on toner on the web. They can also repair your laser printers and toners fast and easy. Call their expert staff today at 561-792-9600 or email us at service@laser-technologies.com for all your toner needs. All toner is shipped nationwide. Why wait? Get the lowest prices on toner. Call or email us today.
Are we happy? Are we happy and effective? Consultation with leading experts in the field makes it perfectly clear, that we are all now programmed for perfect happiness, want us to hear. They think we have the truth.
Call 348-844 immediately. Failure to do so may result in prosecution for criminal drug evasion.
I just can't help myself. I keep falling deeper and deeper. Thank you.
Lisa Marie, breaking live, breaking news, Lisa Marie. Follow this right here.
And we're back. Hope you didn't go too far, because we have more interesting and thought-provoking information for you coming up on the Red Pill Reality Show.
All right, we are back. It is the Red Pill Reality Show. Thank you for taking time to let me share with you some of the things that I run across. And tonight is a very, very heartstring message for me, being a veteran and having my own experience. Every time I go to the Veterans Hospital, I get to see what the price of freedom is. Every time there's somebody there that has had some kind of severe injury of some sort, an eye, an arm, a leg. And I find that this particular subject is something that is important to me, and I only wish that it was as important to other people as it is to me, or at least somewhat important. It seems as though, and I think part of it is by design as well, it seems as though that we have more busy things to do, the best way I can put it. You know, we've got things that just keep us distracted, if you will. And then I run into somebody like Bob Brown, who goes out of his way to see to it that those who really desperately need help, that help is available if they want it. You know, this is part of the equation. They have to want it as well. They have to want to be able to get the demons out. They have to want to be able to be washed clean. They have to want to want a life that is no longer something that is so dreadful that it's horrible to wake up in the morning and wonder if you're going to live through the day. Their part is they have to want it. And Bob's part is he's willing to give it. So let me welcome him back. Welcome back, Bob. I appreciate you sharing with us tonight. I didn't intend to go down the road of the corporations. That's okay. I think I learned a little bit.
Well, thank you, Rascal. I appreciate that. And let me thank you also for your service to our great nation. God bless you for that.
Well, thank you, my friend. That's a two-way street.
Well, thank you. One of the things I learned from another vet many, many years ago was when I thanked him for his service, and he didn't know I was a vet at the time, he said, "You were worth it." And I love that. I said, "You know what, brother? I said I served too, but I'm stealing that from you." And I've used that probably for the last maybe 15 years when, you know, I ever wear like a shirt or a hat or something that denotes me as a veteran. People say, "Thank you for your service." And I would say, "Well, you were worth it. So thank you for the kind words." Wow. And it really takes them back a little bit, you know, and I said, you got to invest in the Republic. And yes, I mean, I didn't intend to go down that road either, but I think if you will indulge me, one of the things I'd like to talk about is our plan for the veterans, that magical 3 months of time from the time they get off the street to the time they're back, basically self-sufficient again. If I could talk about that a little bit, I think that'd be
sure.
So our transition centers, or TCs, when we find a veteran and we're basically going to process that veteran, and we determine that they would be a good fit. When they come into a TC or a transition center, we're going to have no drugs, but a no alcohol, no tobacco policy. Listen, we do not need to spend money on that. We need to clean our body and our mind out. We need to process. We're going to get a lot of good new information, and we want to recharge the body. And part of that is by growing a lot of our own fruits and vegetables on site. Mm. When you give somebody that's in recovery, whether it's a physical depletion, such as homelessness, or just not getting the nutrients, I think it's very, very important to have a nutrient-rich diet. So we want to take ownership and have those veterans, they're going to help us maintain the gardens and the fruit trees. We'll produce most of our own food,
and the excess produce we intend to take to local restaurants near our transition centers. I think a restaurant would probably want to buy from a veteran sponsored. I don't see any problem with that whatsoever. And any excess we had, we'd find a local farmer's market and generate a revenue for that to help defray our operational cost. The structure is Monday through Friday is to either get them trained for a job or get them to a job so that they can start earning their own money again. And we're going to show them how they can put away first, last, and a security deposit so that they can get into their own hotel. Additionally, some of them are going to have some medical problems. We intend to take every veteran that is not already into the Veterans Administration, the VA system. We want to get them into that system. That system, I looked at it over the last 20 years, has totally evolved magnificently. It's so much better than it used to be. There's a lot more programs out there, but to be honest and to be succinct, it's a bureaucracy. And there's a process. When you need something from the VA, it could be weeks or a month or two before you're going to be seen by a doctor for something that you need.
True.
One of the things we would like to do, you have a lot of former veterans that are now medical doctors in your community, and you have a lot of medical doctors in your community that are veteran friendly. They're patriotic, God-fearing Americans. I have no bones, and I did this with our program, our drill program, is I went out and interfaced with the community, and I said, listen, you're a tremendous resource. You tell us your comfort level. We have veterans that are going to have medical needs, and we're in the VA, but it's 6 weeks or a month or two away. Would you treat them at no charge? Would that be your donation to NFAD to take them in and give them competent, capable medical care and follow up whatever prescription meds they need? Now we're getting them treatment quickly, efficiently. Let's say we have a veteran that had an injury to his hand and he can't really use his hand. He used to be a carpenter and his hand got crushed and he needs reconstructive surgery on his hand. Well, by the grassroots approach that we're talking about, when we have 300,000 or 400,000 people in all 50 states, we have a resource and we categorize them medically and we find out, okay, we've got a great hand physician living in New York. This guy is phenomenal. His dad was a veteran. He loves what we do. And now we can confer with him. And he says, listen, if you'll fly that boy up to New York and put him up in a hotel, I will take care of him. I will do the surgery and the aftercare for no cost. So now we can take this person, put him on a bus or an airplane. We can have people in our NFAD community in New York pick him up at the airport, get him situated in a hotel, take him to the doctor's appointment, make sure he's got all the follow-up. And now we get his hand fixed. Okay. And we did it a lot quicker and more efficiently. Why can't we do that? And the answer is we can, but somebody's got to do the groundwork. Somebody's got to be willing to do that. I don't mind doing that. I don't mind taking that process and simplifying it, making it replicatable so I could teach it to four other people. And then soon I don't have to do it anymore. Now I've got four other people to do that. And every task that needs to be accomplished, somebody's got to pave that pathway. We pave it. We figure out how to do it. I'll tell you, one of the things I did was, like you mentioned before, when I got out of the Marine Corps, you know, I got out with two eyes and both hands and all my fingers and toes and legs. And I didn't go to the VA because I didn't think I needed it. I figured there was very limited resources. And that, you know, the guys that are a lot worse off than me, they needed those resources. The truth couldn't be further from that is that there's a lot of resources out there. And in fact, from talking to somebody at the VA just last week, the VA gives back some fundage every year because they don't have enough veterans to completely satiate their budget. That's unconscionable. When we have veterans out there, they're starving to death, that are on the streets. So no one's repatriating them. So what we want to do is develop a support infrastructure in the FOD in each state that you may not be a homeless veteran, but you know what? Listen, I contribute my time, my resources, and or financially, but I'm available. In addition to helping you out financially, I will be a resource. If you need somebody in my state, in my community, I will help these guys. I will find some homeless veterans in my community. I'll get them down to the VA. I'll get them set up. I'll help qualify them for the NFAD program. You know, I'll be the guy to encourage them and I'll be a liaison for you in my home state. And I'll go out to the homeless veterans on the street and I will educate them. We would love to have a little demo video, just a little 10-minute video that here, who, what, when, where, how, and why. This is what NFAD's about. So that we can have concerned people in those states go out and basically explain to the vets, this is a resource and it's available for you. Would you like to take advantage of it? And we can put them on a Greyhound bus or an airplane and fly them down to South Texas and get them started again with basic issue. We have, if you ever text us, tell us more, we'll send you a little thing. And we have different sponsorship levels. The basic level is, look, we'll take whatever you can give us. But at a basic level, to keep it grassroots, we would like to have just a $25 donation once a month. If you can't afford to do that, could you give us a dollar every week? That's every 2 weeks when you get paid, a dollar, that's $25 a year. We'll take it. And with that money, we can afford to do basic issue. Or you come on board and you say, listen, you know, I came down, I visited your transition center, Bob, I like what you do. Here's what I'll do. Every month, I will commit to underwriting the cost of basic issue for 5 veterans. That means that we give them 3 pairs of shoes, 3 pairs of pants, 3 shirts, so they can get a job. They have something to walk around town with. They can wash some clothes and still have other clothes. You know, some can be in the laundry. They don't just have 1 pair of clothes. And we'll help them with the basic health and comfort things. I want to go around the barbers in the community and say, listen, here's what we're doing in your community. Would you give 5 free haircuts a week to our veterans? You know, when they look good, they start feeling good. Help them look squared away and have that military persona again. Help them, you know, trim their beards. And, you know, yeah, sure, we would love to do that. Absolutely. Those veterans are going to remember those people when they get a job and when they're, then they can go back and they can pay for their haircuts and they can tip that barber well because they remember that barber, when they had nothing, took care of them. It's just people caring for people.
Goes a lot further than the dollar, right?
It really does. Like I know down in the area that I'm in currently, we have a Ford dealership that's owned by a combat vet from Vietnam.
Wow.
And I'll tell you that if I find a veteran that used to be an auto mechanic, but he hocked all his tools and hasn't done anything mechanically in 5 or 6 years, but he's an ASE certified mechanic, you know, we're going to get this guy. I'm going to introduce those two individuals. I'm going to take the owner of that Ford dealership and this veteran. I'm going to go, listen, tell me that you can't put another mechanic on your payroll. Help this boy get back in the saddle again, you know? And then somebody else can say, listen, man, I don't have any tools. Okay, well, let us start buying your tools one at a time. And in a year or two, now you're gainfully employed as an auto mechanic at Ford. Okay, you're making good money. You have all your own tools back again, and you're set. But now we want you to give back. Now that as an alumni, you've graduated from program, you've made it, brother. We helped you off the street. Now you're going to turn around, and we expect you to come back and help your other brothers and sisters do the exact same thing. What a resource you are. You were there, done that. You can mentor these guys and these girls and say, listen, hang in there, sister. I was 2 years ago. I was exactly where you were. Okay. And just stay with the program, work the steps. Okay. And you're going to have it and you're going to be where I am in another year or two. It's I've done this before in the criminal justice system. I did that for over 10 years. It's a workable system. It actually works. And I've done it sporadically over the last 30 years myself individually. What we want to do is standardize it. Like Henry Ford, a lot of people were making cars back in the day, but they were one car at a time. They were handmade. Henry Ford made it replicatable. He made it a production line. And we want to basically do the same thing. You know, a society like America should not have 40,000 veterans on the street. Unbelievable. Amen. Yeah. You know, when we go out there
And then when we get them into their apartment, there's a lot of bankers out there. There's a lot of finance people out there, real estate developers. Some of the people like Jerry knows, okay? And would you, I don't need your money, okay? You know, because we're not a 501c3. But if you make $400 million a month or a year or whatever it happens to be, a decade, okay? Could you not find some of your money people? And would you just pay them to come down and give classes to our veterans and teach them how they can develop an investment plan so that they can buy their own house in a couple of years? How can they have a retirement account when they can't work anymore? Hmm. Why can't we do that? I'd much rather have, you know, you give a man a fish and he eats today, you teach a man a fish and he'll never be hungry again.
Yep.
So let's teach the veterans how to do what you do. Let's teach them how to get a car. If you have a car dealership or a used car dealership out there, can't we figure out a way of mentoring with us and saying, listen, Bob, I know that you're going to have some guys that are going to need their own set of wheels. I promise you, I will give them a sound, mechanically workable vehicle at exactly what we paid for it in the trade-in, okay? Or maybe we'll give it to them a little less because that's our donation this month in the FOD. And now these veterans are able to buy their own car again, and they have their own wheels. And it's our hope, our intent, that after we repatriate them with their military family, we want to repatriate them with their biological family. Okay, if you're from Wisconsin, your whole family's up there, but you're ashamed to talk to them because you've been homeless for 6 years and they don't know where you are. You know, I don't even want to call them, man. My mom would be, you know, she'd be disgusted with me. I'd be so embarrassed to tell my mom, you know, all the potential she thought I had. But you know what? I'm working now for 2 years. You know, I'm an auto mechanic again, man. I work at Ford. You know what? We'll help you. You want to go back to Wisconsin now? We'll pay for the moving van. We'll help you. We'll get you out there. We'll get you set up. We'll help you unpack. And now you can go back home in your community again. And now you're productive in your own community with your town, with your family, with your friends. That's a win-win.
Amen. Absolutely.
So that's the dream. And maybe it's audacious and maybe it's a little too ambitious for some people. But you know what? Any great idea goes through three stages of evolution. At first, it's ridiculed. And then it's begrudgingly, you know, it's begrudgingly accepted, stage two. And the third stage is people wonder how it ever could have existed any other way. And I'll give you two great examples of that. Electricity. You know, when I was in Sweden one summer and I went to one of these mills that, you know, it had the little water wheel and it used the water wheels and it ran little conveyor belts. And they had a whole textile industry that ran off of water power. And they were talking about how the king of Sweden thought it was evil. It was satanic. Electricity was from Satan, and you know, it was prohibited. And they finally got where they could use it. And if people were afraid to have electricity in their house back in the day. Now some of that was shoddy insulation. They didn't really understand that. Houses would burn down. See, you should have used whale oil lamps. But eventually, people begrudgingly accepted it. They go, "Oh yeah, I got one of those new electrically wired houses." What? Oh yeah, you know those new electrical things, man. I got to pay like an extra $15 a month for my electric bill, but you know it comes all wired up and stuff. And yeah, I didn't like it at first. I was kind of scared, but now it's pretty cool. And now, when you buy a house, can you imagine buying a house today? You go, it's an electric-free house. What? Oh yeah, it has no electricity. It's like the old days. What are you, crazy? How do I run my air conditioner? You know, how do I run my trash compactor? I my food processes. I need electricity. So. You know, running water. When they first started putting running water in the houses, people go, they ridiculed it. What are you, crazy? I'm not paying you money to put, I go down to the creek where I got my little pump out there. It costs me nothing. I'm not paying you $5 a month to have water running in my sink. And then after a while, it was begrudgingly accepted. Yeah, you know, all the houses now, you can't buy one unless it has this newfangled plumbing coming in there. And, you know, it flushes your toilet and you got water in your sink and I guess it's okay. And now today, people wonder how they ever could have lived in a house without water. You know, it's crazy, but I was over in Sweden a few years ago, and somebody I met, I needed to use the restroom,
And it was cold. It was a really cold winter day. And he said, we don't have a bathroom in the house. I go, what? We have an outhouse out back.
Oh, my God.
I was like, oh, wow. So I went out there, right? And, you know, I didn't ask for the toilet paper. I go, they had old magazines out there, you know?
Oh, my God.
You know, and I'll tell you, you know, it's, you got to rip out a page of the magazine. And my soft little tush was not used to magazine paper there, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. So.
Wow, that's crazy.
You know, but see, when I tell people what I want to do with Nafad, and I've been like that my whole life, you know, when God gives somebody a vision, a lot of times other people can't understand that vision because it's not your vision.
Yeah.
But the person that was given the vision as a gift, when they start to take action and they start to make it real, then the other people can see, ah, now I see. Ah, that's what you meant. Man, that's pretty cool. How can I help? So I break it down to there's people that make things happen. There's people who watch things happen. And then there's people who wondered what happened. You know, where the heck did this organization come from? Everywhere I look, man, I see Nafad this, Nafad that. Okay. Well, it was because the people that made things happen had the vision and they were willing to work relentlessly to pursue that goal, mission-oriented blindness. They were going to always do, every day, we're going to do the right thing at the right time for the right reason in the right way because our veterans deserve it. And then as it starts to take fruition and it starts to become substantive, people start seeing that and they're like, wow, man, I'm watching you. That's pretty cool. How can I help? And then eventually people wonder how it ever could have been any other way. Can you imagine being able to tell your grandkids in a couple of years, there was a time in America where, believe it or not, people that fought and bled for our country were relegated to obscurity on the streets of America. Yep. You know, we pay a guy to take a pigskin ball, you know, millions of dollars to run it up and down a court. Or, you know, if you spend, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours, you may one day be able to hit a little white ball with a stick into a hole in the ground way down yonder on that grass field. You know, I'm sorry, but there's a couple things in life that I'm devoid of the capacity to understand that. Now, if you're a golfer, you like football, I'm just not a team sport guy. And sorry, you know, I like things that I can physically do.
I'm not sports at all. I think sports is a distraction. I had a bad experience growing up when I was in high school and I was the third string on the football team. You know, and back then to be on the football team, that's the coolest thing in the world, right?
Right.
So I got on the football team, third string. We were for 13 years, we were the national champions. And my first year, they lost, but they couldn't blame it on me because I was third string. But I had a coach that was unforgiving, driven, like, oh my gosh, like I had never seen anything like that in my life. And one day my leg was hurting really bad, really, really bad. They had us doing these different exercises. And the next day when I was just hurting and I kept telling, you know, I can't run. He said, I don't care if your effing bone is sticking out, you're running. And it just turned me off. So after that season, I just quit. I never really got into sports. I watch it every once in a while. You know, I haven't watched a Super Bowl in decades. I haven't watched a whole game in decades. Any game, any football game, any football or any, just about any of that stuff. I just don't find it interesting. Not that it's just me. There's plenty of people, obviously, who find it very interesting. You got to remember that those industries are created as entertainment industries. Think about that. They're not what you think. It's just like WWE, I think it is Worldwide Wrestling Entertainment.
Right.
Okay. Those guys are really jumping up and down on those mats. All that's real. But the person who's going to win, that's already foretold before they ever get into the ring. And it's the same thing with these other entertainment industries. People put a lot of money on, oh, this guy's going to win, that guy's going to win. Just remember, all that has been foretold. They already know who's going to win.
Yeah, and, you know, we call it about the amusement industry, the entertainment. You could say, you know, we have entire parks, amusement parks. And, you know, the word muse means to think.
And whenever you put, you know, an A in, like, you know, sexual, you have asexual, you know, it means to not. So when you amuse, it means literally not to think. And we have an entire industry out there, you know, the entertainment, amusement industry, that makes you not think. And I think at a time, a critical time in the world like today, I think people need a little bit more intellectual capacity. And, you know, when you to me, it's unconscionable when you're out there just enjoying the benefits of the world's greatest society. And it really is. We have our problems out there in our society, but when you travel around the world, we really are the greatest things since sliced bread out there. There should be nobody in our society. You know, the amount of foreign aid we give away, like you were talking about earlier today, Ruscala, the $5,000 we give illegal aliens that come across our border, you know? And, well, I'll tell you what, can you imagine? I think a bunch of homeless veterans out there, those 40,000 homeless veterans out there, would love to get a $5,000, you know, wow, that'd be nice.
Or to be put up in one of these plush hotels. I mean, like 4-star hotels that they're putting these people in. And they, in one of them, I think it was in California, they kicked out the vets. It was a place that was housing vets. So they kicked the vets out so they could put these people in.
I heard about that. Yes.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
So, you know, I think that, you know, you understand a little bit of human psychology, especially the veterans. We want to structure our transition centers where they come back and they feel like they're back home. This familiarity, the way we run it, it's very structured. Everybody's going to be in charge of to some facet of ground maintenance or doing some individual facet to run the center as an additional duty. They're going to be required to keep their little hooch, you know, their little two-man unit clean, make their bed, you know, do their laundry, all the responsible things. We're going to encourage them to be involved in some type of physical fitness development thing. You know, we'd like to have like a basketball court and maybe a little weight room out there and some trails on our property. We're looking at a 15-acre property right now that we're in negotiations to hopefully close with, and we could have little running trails and walking trails there, and maybe a pool close to the beach, or take people down to the beach on the weekend. So Monday through Friday is very structured, and they learn that regimentation. And then we make sure that we give them, you know, 8 hours of sleep a night, that they're gainfully employed for 8 hours. And then they have 8 hours of focused, constructive free time to try to put their personal life back together again. Saturday, we want to do some spiritual development. I'll tell you that we're a Bible-based program. If that offends you, that's, I understand, you know, there's a lot of other places and things to do out there, but we want to go back like, you know, Jesus did and basically, you know, teach them the good news of the coming kingdom of God. And I believe that the Bible will answer every question that you could pose in our life. The Bible has a solution to almost every dilemma, or every dilemma that you could possibly quandary and say, hey, how do we do this? By teaching them the bedrock of America, you know, America was founded on the gospel of Jesus Christ. It wasn't founded by religionists on religion. It was founded by Christians on the gospel of Jesus Christ. And for that reason, all faiths were able to come here and own property and prosper. So then we want to do life skill development. How do people, you know, how do societies work? You know, that everybody produces something, everybody gives. If everybody's take, or if nobody's paying taxes, society falls apart. But if everybody is giving something to the common good, so it's going to be incumbent upon you to give something back to society. I don't care if you're a candlestick maker, or you bake bread, or you fix transmissions, okay? Or you install air conditioners or hem dresses. You do something that makes everybody else's life a little bit better, and they'll compensate you monetarily for that. And you're going to find in society that there's something that you do better than anybody else, or that you have a passion for. And that's the thing that's what you get up in the morning to do. We want you to do that. And we're going to help you become gainfully employed in that. And if you have a skill set that, well, you can make money in it, let's get you occupied in in producing an income, doing something you're really good at. But if you like something else, let's encourage that as a hobby. You want to learn how to play the drums. You want to learn how to play the violin. Okay. You want to get involved in, you know, cross country or water skiing. We'll help you do that. So over the weekend, in addition to spiritual development and life skills training, we would like to take them out into the community and have structured tours where they get to see the different, like the theater, maybe a factory or a manufacturing warehouse and different, you know, maybe a car dealership, and have the vets get a little bit of tour about how they do what they do and expose them to a lot of different things out there. And maybe they go, you know, I'd really like to do that. How could we get you from where you are presently into doing that for a living? And by investing in them, we're investing in a lot of illegal aliens, right? That are coming here and, you know, God bless them for wanting to better their life. You know, we have a process for that. And I think that there's a line, you know, you stand in line, it's called immigration, and you fill up paperwork, and it does take a couple of years to get through there. That's how it's supposed to work. My ancestors did that. They came through Ellis Island in New York, you know, years ago. And I think that was a good system. So let's go back to that. But let's invest in our veterans. Let's give them all the tools that they need. They have a lot of skill sets. They were in the military already. And let's repolish that. Let's dust them off. And let's make them our brothers and sisters again. And let's repeat. And I would love to have a paradigm shift in just a few years where there's no more homeless veterans on the street. That's a thing gone by. Mm. You know, and people tell me, well, that's never going to happen, Bob. Well, you know what? There was a time that you can make a good amount of money being a street sweeper. You could go around because there was an agriculturally based society and horses and donkeys and mules and you know, longhorns were going down pulling wagons and stuff. And they were pooping all over the street. Today, you're going to starve to death if that's all you do is sweep poop off the street. We don't have that anymore. Or if you're a chimney sweep, those things have transitioned out. If you're a milkman, you know, yeah. It's very hard to find a place where you could be a milkman today in America. So I would love to make that a extinct dinosaur to say that there's no more homeless veterans in America.
That would be awesome, my friend. And I'm sure 40,000, I think, is what you said, right?
40,000? Yeah, currently there's over 40,000. Wow. And, you know, may I be so bold and just tell people how they could help if they wanted to?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, you dropped out, Bob.
How's that? Is that better?
Yep, there you go.
Okay. You can write us if you'd like to write us and send us an old-fashioned check. You could do that in any amount. You can make it payable to NAFAD. Our address is 709 North 77 Sunshine Strip, number 114 in Harlingen, Texas. That's Harlingen, Harlingen, Texas. 78550. Again, that is 709 North 77 Sunshine Strip, number 114, Harlingen, 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 Texas, 78550. You can Zelle us money if you'd like to at 239-877-8043. And we have a PayPal link.
It dropped out again.
Yeah, it keeps on cutting out. I'm not really sure why.
I don't know how to minimize
my screen here, brother, and do that. I'll tell you, if you call us or text us at 239-877-8043. Say, tell me more. We'll send you the who, what, when, where, how, and why. All the information you need
to contribute in any way that you would like to. You can PayPal us money. You can sell it to us. You can snail mail it. You can mail us dead presidents. It doesn't really matter. We're totally transparent, as you said before, admirably. So thank you for that, Rascala, that, you know, we're about accomplishing the mission. It's not hard. It's very transparent. We'll give you an update. One of the things that I detest, and I commit that no matter how big NFAD gets, no matter how many states we go to, in every single state, there will always be a number like the number I just provided you, 239-877-8043, that you can call, and you're always going to get a real live human being. Okay, if it's after hours, obviously, leave us a message. But a real live human being will call you back, and they'll be knowledgeable. They won't say, well, I don't know, I got to go check with somebody. These people will be knowledgeable in exactly what we're doing now, real time. They'll be able to be very transparent with you, tell you what our immediate financial needs are, what our building projects are, okay, where your money or donation is going to, and how you can help, not just monetarily, but what resources we need. You know, hey, you know, I just bought a new car. I had the other car for a while. I was going to use it like an everyday car and keep my new car as a, you know, on the weekends thing. But, you know, I really like driving my new car. Really don't need two cars. We would like to donate this car to NFAD. If you have a deserving veteran that could use that. Absolutely. Okay. Now, listen, if you want to get a tax write-off, there's some places that can do that for you. Okay. You can write it off. You know, if you want to give your car to a veteran, we'll make sure it goes to a veteran, and we'll show you the veteran. You can come meet the veteran if you like to, and we'll tell the veteran who gave him his car. Okay. I mean, we might have to sell it for $10 or something just to make it legal. And, you know, he buys it from you for $10 and we transfer title and gets it registered, which is going to cost him a little bit of money too. Those are the concepts. You know, I have a bunch of military boots. You know, I was in the military myself, and, you know, I just got out about 4 years ago, and I got six pairs of boots, and I'm never going to wear these things again. They're in really good condition, and they're size 9.5 men's. Do you have anybody that could use size 9.5? Absolutely. We got about four guys right now that could use size 9.5. Would you like to send them to us, and we'll make sure that they go to deserving people? Hey, I've got four watches in my drawer. You know, I don't know. I used to collect watches back in the day. Or, you know what? I'll tell you what. Hey, I just got a pay raise at work. And look, I'll tell you what. I'm a watch kind of guy. You know, how about if I buy a watch every month and I mail it to you guys, and you give a watch to one of those veterans? That would work. That'd be awesome. Because these are the things these guys don't have anymore. They don't have a wristwatch. They don't have reading glasses. Okay. They got one pair of clothes. You know, one of the gentlemen that we helped out recently, I was talking to him, and, you know, he had a little backpack with him, and I was looking at his clothes, and I said, brother, I says, do you have any other clothes? He goes, no, this is all I have. All right. Well, first thing we need to do is let's get you some other clothes and some toiletries so that you can start rotating your clothes. That you should not be wearing the same pair of clothes more than a day. Mm. Why are we not doing that? You know, you can help as much as you want to. You know, if you have some clothes that are good and you just don't wear them anymore. You know, when I left Florida, I must have had, I don't know, 25 pairs of blue jeans. You know, I'm never going to wear 25 pairs of blue jeans. Nothing wrong with them. They're just, they're broken in now. You know, people pay a lot of money for broken in jeans these days. Mm-hmm. You know, let's give the jeans to somebody that could actually wear them. You know, now Goodwill, I mean, you can take them down to Goodwill, but, you know, Goodwill is a for-profit business. You know, I mean, they have a great name, but Goodwill gets all of their stuff at 100% free. So everything they sell, whatever they sell it for, is 100% profit. You know, God mm-hmm. bless them. Yeah. Well, what can't we do some of that for veterans? And you can, and not everybody will, but the veteran programs in America today are really hanging in there because less than 10% of America literally contributes to them. I think that if more people heard about that, like the gentleman that talked to me, a little while ago, and he saw my Marine Corps sticker, and he goes, God bless you, man. Thank you for my freedom. And I said, well, you were worth it. And then, you know, I took him back a little bit, and I said, hey, would you want to kick in $25 a month to help some homeless veterans? I gave him a card, talked to him for about 2-3 minutes, and absolutely. So I think it's just awareness. People just don't know.
Yeah.
So thank you, Risk Caller, for having us on and letting us, well, you know, talk a little bit about that.
This is one of my heartstrings. When those of us who served in Vietnam came back, we were called all kinds of names. We were spit on. We were treated as though we were the problem. And we went believing that what we were doing was a patriotic thing, only to find out that it wasn't anything of the sort. And to have, I can't think of the right way to express it. To have put your life on the line, basically, and return to that kind of atmosphere. And it was all driven by the government. The government was the ones who were creating this havoc on us. And then have them, you know, the people that you supposedly were doing what you're doing to preserve whatever, you know, freedoms that they have, to have those very people literally turn their back on you and treat you like trash, really. Treat you like trash. It's a hard thing. That in and of itself is enough to break somebody and make them, you know, go crazy. So,
absolutely. You know, in our Facebook group, NAFAD, we have a Facebook group that if you are on that platform, we would encourage you to look for it, NAFOD, and ask to join. But there's a story on there about, true story, about Abe. Abe was a homeless veteran in my hometown of Merrick, New York. And when I was a kid growing up there, I lived on a street called Chinooka Avenue, C-H-E-R-N-U-C-H-A, Chinooka Avenue. And I always thought it was a really crazy name. And I was probably about 8 or 9 years old, and I learned where Chinooka came from. Harry Chinooka was one of the 49 members of the U.S. Navy band on the USS Arizona. On December 7th, 1941, him and the rest of his band members were killed instantly, I guess when one of those torpedo bombs hit the USS Arizona, and they went down with the ship. And, you know, they're heroes, and, you know, God bless them, they gave their life for our country. But, you know, they basically, you know, died on day one of World War II. And because of that, we named the street that I grew up on Chinooka Avenue. Well, there was a man by the name of Abe, and Abe was a homeless vet, and all the kids loved Abe because Abe was kind of really friendly to us, you know, and he got to know us by name. And Abe always wore his olive drab field jacket everywhere he went, and he had this little army cap on his head. And when it got really cold out, Abe would have like a black and red checkered shirt underneath that, just a little added insulation and padding, I guess. And all the parents thought Abe was kind of a hobo because, yeah, Abe did drink a little bit too much. And if he got, you know, a couple extra dollars for donation and food, he would go down to the liquor store and buy himself a bottle of his favorite potion. Well, the sad part about that was that, you know, my grandfather knew about Abe. My dad knew about Abe. All the other parents knew about Abe. And they were like, you know, hey, you know, he's just a hobo. He's a drunk. Well, to give you a little bit more to the story, my grandfather was the commander of the veterans of World War I for all of New York State. And in the summer months, you know, because it was cold as crap, I guess, up there, that they would have their conventions in the summer months. And my grandfather used to bring like 3 or 4 Greyhound buses down my little dead end street. And my dad had a big screened house out in the backyard. And we'd get all these war birds from the First World War. They loved KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken. So we'd get a couple of the buckets of the Colonel's Best, you know, the original recipe. And these guys would sit out there. And, you know, I was really impressionable, young kid at 7, 8 years old. And, you know, I got to shake hands with guys that literally chased Pancho Villa around Mexico on horseback, or, you know, fought the Germans hand to hand in the trenches of Bellewood, France. And, you know, I was impressionable. I loved hearing their stories. But, you know, these guys knew the hobo, you know, Abe. And no one said, hey, man, that's one of our brothers, man. We need to, like, let's get Abe off the street. My dad was the vice commander of the American Legion post in that same town. And, you know, they sponsored a Boy Scout troop. You know, and I never thought about it. I didn't process it as a kid back then. But why didn't anybody help Abe? You know, Abe was a veteran. But he was just the town hobo. And I remember it was one cold, cold winter, probably about 1975. And we were up there at the school bus stop waiting for the school bus to get there. And, you know, we did these like makeshift exercises, you know, when you grow up, when it's cold and you got to stand there waiting for that school bus, you're just doing like jumping jacks and stretches and bounces and anything you can to kind of generate a little body heat. And on this one particular morning, Abe was sitting on the steps right by the school bus step. There was like this, I think it was called the Blue Marlin. And it was a like a seafood restaurant. Hell's Angels used to hang out there on the weekend. And another story, I grew up kind of friendly with Hell's Angels. It took me a long time to realize they were an outlaw criminal street enterprise because they were nice to the kids, you know? And so Abe is sitting out there on the steps and it was really, really cold. And he said, hey, how you guys doing? And, you know, hey, Abe, good seeing you. And, you know, we didn't really think much about it. We got on the school bus. He goes, all right, you guys have a good day at school. And we was like, see you, Abe. And we were just happy to get on the school bus, you know, so it was not so biting cold. And it probably took us about a week or two to realize, hey, anybody see Abe around? We hadn't seen him for like a week or two. The last time anybody could remember seeing Abe was sitting on those steps at the school bus. And, you know, he just disappeared. There was nothing in the newspaper about him. None of the town gossip. Abe just, I don't know, just totally disappeared. And the sad thing for me, years later, recollecting and reflecting on Abe, was that what we knew about Abe fought his way all the way through Europe during World War II. Abe was like in almost every major engagement in Europe. Okay, this guy was a combat soldier for the United States Army and fought Germans all the way across Europe. And he came back and yeah, maybe he had a parade or two, you know, the famous Times Square, the sailor, you know, grabbing that girl and giving her a kiss and bending her backwards. But Abe was relegated to obscurity. Abe was homeless. I remember one time Abe used to hang out behind the Blue Marlin, that seafood restaurant there. And underneath the foundation, it was like some of the bricks were moving. It was like a little hole in there. We found some of his old sea rats, you know, the old military canned food. It was a lot older than the stuff I got in the 80s. And that was Abe's stash of food.
Wow.
And, you know, I never really appreciated that Abe, you know, would get some donations and he'd go down to like the Army Navy store and he bought some of that canned food. Because he knew he could store it. I guess he trusted it probably better than the stuff he could get elsewhere. But it was so cold out there. I learned in the Marine Corps in the 80s, when we had that canned food, that it would freeze in the wintertime. And like when we were in Korea, you had to figure out what you were going to have for lunch. And we had to stick it inside our field jacket in our pockets and try to keep it from freezing. So we had, you know, we had food to eat later. We didn't have to, you know, chew on ice stuff.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, Abe basically died unknown.
That's sad.
In a very affluent town. We had more corporate CEOs living there. Any one of my friend's fathers could have taken Abe and given him a great job, got him off the street. And a lot of my friend's fathers were veterans also. And I don't know, because I was too young to really appreciate it. I don't know if it was the social dynamics, the times or whatever, but that should never have happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why our mantra is brothers and sisters for life. If you were in the United States military, and I'm a little unconventional here, I know a lot of good Marines and soldiers and some sailors out there that they were stellar performers in the military. And sometimes they did the right thing at the right time for the right reason in the right way, but their command structure didn't like that. And some of those guys got a dishonorable discharge or a bad conduct discharge.
Wow.
And they don't get any benefits now.
All right, we are all out of time. You have been an absolute wonderful guest. I appreciate everything that you do. Again, it's a tug on my heartstrings. And we're going to be looking forward to having you on more often. We'll talk about that at another time. But I do want to thank you, Bob. Greatly appreciate it. I wish you an awesome evening. And what's luck with this weekend. Thanks again.
Well, thank you, brother. God bless you. God bless America. And God bless our homeless veterans.
Amen. Take the blue
pill. Take the red pill. Take the blue pill. Take the red pill, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
I thank you for your time. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Scholar. God bless you.
Thanks. I wasn't, I got to apologize for about Jerry. I wasn't expecting him to go down that road. I really thought he'd be interested because he's a veteran supporter. I don't think he's a vet, but I know he's a veteran supporter. And I thought he'd be interested.
Yeah.
In I really didn't expect him to go down that road. I was starting to get a little irritated with the whole thing.
You know, brother, I didn't expect it either. I kind of felt like he was like, you know, turf garden. He had his position and